This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
You know, it's not officially, I guess, summer, and we're still in the spring and all that stuff. But, boy, this has a good feel to it today. And, of course, welcome, everybody. We're here till 12 on what should be a busy day, as always. You know, we got 9 teams right now with their rookie mini camps, including the Seahawks. We'll give you updates on that. Greg Bell will be joining us at 9:30. We'll also get a report from Matt Maiocco about what's going on with the San Francisco 49ers. Dave Grosby joining us at 10. But let's get started with some headlines. Mariners last night, well, that was a dud, 5-0 they lose, and was one where the only highlight, again, I guess you can say, was Albert Pujols getting his 3,000th hit. Of course, everybody was able to see Ichiro, even though, again, he's not able to play now the rest of the season. He's moved into the front office, although, again, it's kind of a front office team type of thing, because he's still going to be in uniform, he's still going to go home and away, but Ichiro, at least not retiring, but he's not going to play the remainder of this season. So the series continues tonight at 6:10 on here as a pregame, of course, beginning at around 5. In other news, boy, the Dodgers, they're in Mexico with the Padres, get a no-hitter, 4 pitchers involved in that no-hitter. Dodgers, of course, off to a very bad start for them, team that's supposed to be a 90-some win team, and they're basically struggling around 500. The Angels win last night, by the way, puts them in a tie with the Astros for first place in the AL West. In football news, Cliff Averill announced, well, of course, it was announced that he was released with a failed physical. He'll be probably making some announcement as far as what he's going to do, I would think, as early as Monday. My guess is you're not going to see him play football anymore, but he's going to be very prominent in some of the things he's going to do. But what a great career he had. Great signing in 2013. Was able to get 34.5 sacks. The stuff he was doing on the field was maybe topped by some of the stuff that he did off the field. What his stuff was with Haiti, going over and helping the people there, and, you know, schools and buildings and stuff. I mean, just phenomenal. Cliff Averill, you know, being released, and my guess is he's not going to play football again. Seahawks getting 3 players signed, including Will Disley, on the draft choices, so 6 remain unsigned. Michael Dixon, the punter, was also able to get a deal done, and so the Seahawks continue their mini camp today. There'll be one more day tomorrow of all the rookies, and of course, I guess looks pretty good right now. And of course, Shaquem Griffin was pretty wild. I mean, he was so animated in what he was able to do running up and down the field. It was kind of fun to see. And of course, they had to kind of hold him back a little bit. No surprise, because he wants to do an all-out assault as far as making a great showing in the National Football League. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing on this sunshiny Saturday morning?
Very nice.
Sir?
How about you?
Oh, doing great, man. Enjoying the sunshine. You can't beat it, you know. It's just great in the mild weather.
Oh, I know. In fact,
I have been
neglecting doing this for the longest time, but this morning I even got up and tried to get the deck cleaned a little bit. So, start to get that view of Lake Washington and get maybe somehow, some way, get outside. I just hope there's some way I also can get a jog in.
I think you'll be able to accomplish that, Mr. Clayton.
It's not going to be easy because, you know, 1:30 is practice over at the VMAC. Trying to see what's going on with this class. I wasn't able to make it over yesterday, but we're definitely going to make it today.
Oh, definitely. You know, you were talking about Shaquem Griffin. You know, it's a great story, but that guy's a hell of a football player. Mm-hmm. You were watching him play football in college.
He's sensational.
I mean, if you just turn around and go look at the Auburn football game, the game in the bowl game,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he was the most valuable player of that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and another thing, what a tackler. That guy can tackle.
He really can.
Yes.
I mean, he can do just about everything. And, you know, I think that obviously the first year he's going to be more of a special teams player. It's kind of interesting that he put him over at weak side linebacker. It was funny because I know when we were doing the lounge last Saturday and he was the 5th round pick, that was the first thing I said. Well, you know, I don't know. His fit would be being a weak side linebacker on most, because you want your fastest linebacker on the weak side. But the position here is strong side linebacker for a guy that can pass rush a little bit, because that's what they did with Bruce Irvin. But they put him over at the weak side.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could put him at the weak side. You could play him at some safety positions. I mean, with his speed and his talent, mm-hmm. he could definitely be pretty versatile on the defensive side of the ball.
Oh, no question.
You he's not a bad, you know, I really, you know, it's a remarkable, you know, that he got drafted. But I tell you, he was worth getting drafted. I mean, if you just go back and watch him in college, you'd be virtually impressed with the way that guy moves on the football field and what he does on the football field. So I'm really happy for him to see that he ended up, especially with the Seahawks, you know, that Pete Carroll and those guys would allow him to get that chance to show his, display his talent, you know. So that's real great for him. Overall,
I like this draft class. Again, I know that it's not going to measure out on other in other cities and all that, because, again, what you're looking at is that, you know, some of the players aren't going to be rated as high on different teams. But for this team, I just think there's some, it looks like there's some good fits.
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, drafts are like this, and you know this as well as I do. You only can grade them on every 3 years. That's when you actually see if the player is turned out to either develop to be a real good player, or he turned out to be a player that doesn't fit that scheme or whatever in that team, or he turns out to be a bust. You know, it's hard to just give an A or a B on a draft until you actually see them get on the field and perform.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, but I mean, the running back from San Diego State, another kid that a lot of people don't know about, but he stood out on his San Diego State team.
Right.
As one of their better players. I mean, an all-around third down back, you know, a real good player.
And they basically couldn't tackle him. That was the big thing from him in college. It just really, he was that good.
Yeah. You couldn't take him off the field at San Diego State.
Mm-mm.
You see, I think a lot of folks, Mr. Clayton, get enamored with the guys from the major schools, the major colleges that are football colleges. If they don't come from their college, they don't think they're that good. But they are good players. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, take a player from Alabama. If you take him out of the equation of playing as a team with Alabama and put him on a Vanderbilt, can he stand out? That's what you'd have to ask yourself.
Right.
So when I look at a guy that's from San Diego State or what have you, did he stand out on that team? You know, did his talent prevail over the rest of the lesser talent that he was playing with? And I tell you, that running back, he's a nice player.
He really is, and
football.
I think he's
yeah.
a fit for this team. Yeah. I mean, he's going to probably play at 230 pounds. He's got the third fastest speed from the combine. He offers you a lot, and I mean a lot. And that's what I think you like about this guy is that you know, he can play in passing situations. He needs to work on his pass blocking. That'll be something he'll do a lot in training camp. Probably can't do now because there's not real contact. But no, I just like the fit of this, and you know, I still say this. I don't think they have to rush him because of Chris Carson. I think they can slowly get him on the field and do all the things that he can do. But I think he can be pretty good.
Yes, he can. But you know, I'll tell you this, Mr. Clayton, about running backs. You can take a running back, if he picks up your system pretty well and he understands the nuances of your system, he can be put out there on the first day and perform, especially with a guy with his talent and his skill. The ability to catch the ball out of the backfield is paramount for a running back, and also running between the tackles. Doing that at the same time, he can pretty much crush to be out there at the first game of the season. You know, because when you bring a special talent like that to the equation, it makes it hard for them to say that I'm gonna just put you down. Now you can bring him along. You don't have to destroy him with a Chris Carson there. You don't have to kill him out there, you know, by having him out there 30 touches a game or what have you. You can limit those touches to 20. And you keep the longevity of that player around for a considerable amount of time, you know. So you don't really have to, you know. I think you might see him out there on the first day, Mr. Clayton.
You might, you but know? I can't guarantee it. But it doesn't matter. I think it's just that they got now enough options at the running back position that they can get through. They've got to get Mike Solari working on the offensive line blocking, and I think there'll be enough of a commitment that I think it could be good. By the way, we didn't have any calls last week because we were doing the draft lounge. But what was your thoughts on the Saints trading next year's number one to get Marcus Davenport?
You know, this is something. It's a catch-22 to that. Now, if he turns out to be a guy that'll come out and give you be highly productive, that's okay. Because, you know, playing opposite of Cam Jordan, that's going to help him out because it's going to pull a lot of double teams and stuff, what have you, to Cam Jordan. If the guy comes out and doesn't do that good, it might be a situation where it's, why did you do that? Now, do I think it was a stretch of them going up there and grabbing him? Yes, I thought it was. I thought giving up a first round pick was kind of high. But if you come, if that they turn around and make it to the NFC Championship or make it to the playoffs, well into the playoffs, that first round pick looks like a high second round pick. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I just, you know, it's like, well, I was critical last year. Again, not overly critical because I thought that they got a good player in Kamara. But it's like when they gave up a second round pick to move up to get Kamara when they already had Adrian Peterson and they had Mark Ingram. I thought that was a little silly. But then, hey, it worked out. I mean, he was the best offensive weapon, I guess you could say, among the rookies. I mean, he was Rookie of the Year. So you like that. So what I just wonder about is Marcus Davenport going to be worth basically two number ones?
That's a catch-22. You can only time will tell is once they get on the field and he starts to perform. Now you can put him in a rotation where you can get him, bring him along, and see what you can get out of him. He's a very athletic young man. I looked at him. You know, I haven't seen him play football. You know, because you don't watch too much San Antonio, Texas football. But from what I've seen, the clips I've seen of him, he looks very athletic. He's got an arsenal of moves. You know, the only thing I didn't like about him, he didn't play that much with his hand on the ground. When he started to put more weight on, they started to put his hand on the ground and let him rush the passer, you know. You know, so, like I said, the jury is out. It worked with Alvin Kamara. Can they catch lightning in a bottle twice? That remains to be seen. Now, the guy I was intrigued with that they picked up is the little running back from Louisiana Tech. If you ever saw that guy play, Mr. Clayton, he's pretty exciting. He reminds you of a Darren Sproles. Mm-hmm. Now, why did they take that guy? You know, a six-round pick on a kid like that is very good with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram there. You know, you never have enough running backs. But if you ever watch that little kid, that kid is pretty good, you know. So the draft, you know, it's hard for me to see give them a grade on it right now until I actually see these guys perform, you know. Is this a remain to be seen situation? Well, did anybody else surprise you in the draft?
No, there was a lot of surprises in the draft. I mean, I was surprised that Baker Mayfield went number one. I was surprised that Cleveland took Denzel Ward at number four. I mean, you go through, there's a lot of surprises. I was surprised that Oakland, you know, taking a lot of chances on players that have had problems in the past and took some chances on guys you hardly even knew. So, no, it was a fascinating draft overall and very much fun. But I thought Seattle came out okay. I thought, you know, it was funny. I didn't see that the NFC West had a great draft. I mean, it was all getting grades. They're all going to be, you know, B's, B minuses. Not that they did poorly, but it was one that, you know, didn't have any sizzle to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the draft is to me, the draft is pretty much your forte. Now, you know, you go out there, you get your scouts out there, you go out there, you look at players, you check them out. You know, most people look at their forte. I think a lot of people get caught up in the mock drafts and something like that and predict and think where those guys are going to go. Whereas, you know, hey, area scouts, they got a different perception of that player from what you're looking at. Now you're talking about, did Josh Allen, you think those tweets pushed him down in the draft?
No, I did not, no. I mean, I thought that it was funny because story came out today that Denver nixed the trade at the end with Buffalo at the fifth pick because Bradley Chubb was there, and they were offered the two first-round picks by Buffalo, and then they just backed out at the last moment because they wanted Chubb. Understandable, because I think Chubb is going to be a great player, but Josh Allen could have been number five. No, it didn't seem like he was negatively affected at all. Hey, JB, I've got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, next Saturday, my friend.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with Raider Jim. Jim, how are you?
Hey, good morning, John. How you doing?
Good. How are you? Lots to talk about here. What do you think of what John Gruden's doing?
Right. Very interesting stuff, John. Very interesting stuff. I was a bit surprised that they took the number 10 trading spot and gave it to Arizona in exchange for their number 15 spot and a third-round pick, because I thought that was generous to the Cardinals. I mean, the top 10 pick. They were able to get Rosen for that, and I just thought that was just too high. I thought maybe he was a second-round pick, if not this year, then maybe next year. And but I think the steal of the draft was Mo Hurst, and you know, round five, along with the they gave back to Pittsburgh the number three they acquired from the Cardinals to get Martavius Bryant. Now that I think is awesome. So, and you probably know more about Martavius Bryant than I do, but of what little I do know, I know that it's fantastic. So I'm pleased.
Well, that's good. Yeah, the thing that really became and has now become evident is that John Gruden's pretty much picking the players. And what I wonder about is that, I mean, they were all over the place. I mean, they were old school Raiders in the sense that if you had some background issues, they didn't care. If you had some injury issues, they didn't care. And they took, I think, a few more gambles than you would normally think. Now, will it work? We'll see. But I think there's some good but also some troubling things about, you know, John's draft.
Well, I agree with that, John. Those are legitimate concerns, but let's put the most primary one, and I think you alluded to it a little bit earlier in the week with Danny David Moore about, you know, medical evaluations. I think you spoke to the great example of where Drew Brees was on the market, and he was being shopped by the Chargers, and or he may have been a free agent. And
no, he was a free agent. He was an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah. So Miami was in the mix to get him and the Saints. And when the doctors came in and evaluated Drew Brees, they said, you know, this is not a good situation. I don't think you should do this. And then he went over to, you know, the Saints, and look at his career. It's been phenomenal.
He'll Hall of Fame career.
Into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And for rightly so. He's played excellently. Well, it's one of the few times in Nick Saban's illustrious career where he's had a failure. And he had to rely upon doctors and their evaluations to.
And the doctors would not grant it, and he could not overrule them.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I think, you know, getting a second opinion or third opinion is kind of important. And, you know, the Raiders have some experience here. You know, we've talked on this on your show about Leon Bender. They did not know that he had a heart ailment, and he passed away before he even had a down with the Raiders. And he was from Washington State. He was the most sought-after defensive lineman at the time. I mean, he was going to be a great prospect. And then, you know, and then they had experience with D.J. Hayden not too long ago, number one draft pick out of University of Houston, who's now still playing with the Detroit Lions. I mean, these were risky picks. You just don't know. And I suppose it plays up what Madden was talking about earlier this week in a column when he's saying, look, you just don't know. It's such a there are so many variations, so many intangibles, and so many probabilities to work out that you're really just tossing it up to, you know, chance at times. So in all, I think that they did a good job. Everybody wanted Maurice Hurst before he was sent down from the combine, and we've got the University of Michigan and Harvard University saying thumbs up. To me, that's okay.
And by the way, if you saw yesterday, John Gruden did say that he's been medically cleared because he was a first-round talent, and, well, he goes into fifth round, which is you can perceive to be a bargain, but then you just don't know.
No, you don't. No, you don't. So I think all in all, and they have some players that nobody's ever heard of. You know, they got this guy from Sam Houston State who, you know, I think they lost Denico Autry, another Division II defensive lineman who left to go to the Colts. And they needed help on the, especially the interior push in that line. So they shored that up with this PJ Hall guy and with Mo Hurst. So I think they did well there, John. I think they did really well. I'm excited to see it. The one thing I wanted to talk to you about, John, because you know him and I don't, but I read his column, is Peter King. He's going on to other pastures after 29 years with, you know, with SI Monday Morning Quarterback. I mean, your work, Peter King's work. Fitzpatrick over at the Cap. Those are my go-to sources for not only Raiders intelligence but overall NFL intelligence. And it's you know, he had a unique style about how he wrote. He wrote from a very personal point of view, and he had such great insight about not only the history, which I know you and I appreciate, but also, you know, just great. He informed his audience with the human endeavor of the game. And that's what I really, really enjoyed about reading his column. So I'm gonna miss him, and it's gonna be interesting to see how.
Well, he's leaving SI, but he's gonna be writing Monday for NBC Sports.
Yes, John, but you and I both know that when free agents change from one team to the next, there's no guarantee they're gonna do the same thing they used to. So,
no, so you understand, you know, I go back 30 years with Peter. He was in Cincinnati. I was out here in Seattle, and you know, we knew each other, and we actually started a notes network with a bunch of writers. And so we did it by conference call, and they had like 11 guys around the country that were on the conference call. And I mean, he's just he's so good and such a great person that I'm with him at the Hall of Fame all the time. I mean, he's been on my podcast a bunch, or I've been on the show. He's just great. And I think that it was the wear and tear just got to him. And so now this is going to be a little bit of an easier job, but and a very high paying job. I'm just happy for him. Hey, got to run.
Okay, John, take care.
All right, Jim, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Hey, Tara.
Hi, Mr. Clayton. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I noticed when watching Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, when they are running to their left and throwing, that they have similar mechanics to a second baseman. What do you think?
Yeah, because I remember I talked to Russell Wilson about this. It was for a Sunday conversation on ESPN. And what Tara, sometimes you're forced in a job to do some things that you don't want to do. Okay, so for example, and again, I'm a very loyal person. It's like somebody wants me to do it, I do it. So it was a request that I had to ask Russell Wilson, okay, how's it feel to be a Seattle person and have to wear a Texas Ranger uniform? Because remember, in spring training, he was a guy that was on the Rangers had signed. And, you know, he gave he put aside and gave an answer and all that stuff. And then I came back and it just came to me. It's like, well, tell me this. What has baseball meant to your football career? And his eyes lit up, and he said, well, here's what it is. He said, I used to be a second baseman, and if you notice, when I'm running around, as a second baseman, you have to make throws from every different angle, and you have to still be precise with it. And so that helps me when I'm running around trying, because, again, having been a second baseman, he knows to throw the ball a little bit differently. And I said, interesting. And so that does show you, as a former baseball player, you can incorporate some of the things that you do in baseball into football if you're a quarterback.
Yeah. And also, both of them, I think pocket awareness helps them a lot, like by pitching the ball, like by shuffle passing it. And knowing what's going on around you.
Right.
They're both very good quarterbacks.
No, I mean, he definitely was helped by that. There's no question. And you know, I give him credit because, I mean, he's done such a great job and is going to continue to evolve. And I think that, I mean, you know, he for whatever reason, I mean, again, everybody thought that he was MVP caliber going into December. And then things kind of went awry. And now people were a little bit critical of him. I mean, you can't be critical of him. He's a great quarterback. He's a great person. And again, now he's one of the main focuses on this football team.
Yeah, and I think he's a quarterback that doesn't fit the mold, but I think he will be an MVP one day. And like you said, you can't be that critical. Like if you think of Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, like no quarterback can do it by themselves.
Right.
They can only do what they're capable of doing.
Mm-hmm. No, great point. Hey, Tara, go ahead. You're great, Tara.
My point.
Hey, thank you so much. Enjoy this weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, Greg Bell, the News Tribune. Let's talk minicamp and what's going on with the rookies. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us is Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune. And so I was not able to be over there yesterday to see the first day of rookie minicamp. I was doing moving the chains on Sirius, so I'll be there today. So what did I miss? Kind of give me an update of what you saw as far as the rookies.
Hi, John. First of all, Shaquem Griffin is everything you'd think he'd be, and watching someone with one hand catching footballs and banging off his tackling sleds. And they actually had to dial him back yesterday. He was running around, just running too hard. During walkthroughs, during the warm-up period for the first mini-camp practice, so the coaches said, hey, dial it back a little bit. bunch of people from Central Florida tell me he only has one speed. So he was very eager to show what he can do. Playing weak side linebacker, of course, a lot of pass and catch, pass and touch in mini camps and no pads. So he got to do a lot of pass coverage and dropping into coverage. Pete Carroll went through a litany of all nine of his draft choices and what he thought of each of them. And he said Alex Magoo, the seventh-round pick, the backup quarterback, surprised him the most for the first day with his arm strength, his accuracy. They knew him as a guy who can throw well off the spot when he's pressured. Carroll intimated he didn't know he had as strong and accurate of an arm in the pocket as he did. And one thing, John, I noticed that Carroll did not mention, but I could see and it was very obvious, Brian Schottenheimer, the new play caller, offensive coordinator, and quarterback's coach, is involved in everything. He's exactly as advertised, into the eaches and into the details. He'll run in to the formation just before the snap and grab a wide receiver and move him a couple more feet inside in the slot. I saw him do that a couple times. Very hands-on and intricately involved in everything that's offense. And from first blush, it looks like Carroll has given Schottenheimer the keys to everything on the offense and that he is much more intimately involved in the teaching and the moment and emotional than Daryl Bevel, who was a little more studious and back and would teach between plays or after plays. Schottenheimer goes and gets him, and that's going to be a change for that offensive staff and those offensive players. It's different.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the one thing, and again, obviously it wasn't a problem, you could say, but it's kind of a weird dynamic because, I mean, even though Daryl Bevel was the offensive coordinator and called the plays, you know, still the assistant head coach was Tom Cable, and Tom had a big voice in the running game, and it's like, okay, so who really is in charge? I mean, you really had two kind of bosses, and one in Daryl Bevel who's very quiet and polite.
Exactly, and that's going to become noticeable, that there is only one chief on that offense now, and it's Schottenheimer. And you're right, there is no run game coordinator, pass game coordinator. The quarterback's coach is not Carl Smith anymore. It's Brian Schottenheimer, the same guy who calls the plays. So instead of three people basically working with Russell Wilson and the play calls, it's one. And I think that's going to show up not only on the practice field, but in a lot of ways, in the meeting rooms. And he's a fiery, no-nonsense guy, Schottenheimer. You can see that. Kellen Clemens told me that. He's had him as his coach, a quarterback, veteran quarterback, of course, had him for 7 of his 10 years in the league, and says this guy will rip anyone. He's very detail-oriented. If you're a step off in your alignment, he'll tell you about it. A former quarterback who's into the fundamentals of the position as well. I saw him working with Magoo on the handoff. After a handoff he made, he pulled Magoo aside and was showing him the footwork and how to carry out the fake beyond the handoff and just into the intricacies, which this is that time of year for it. But as you mentioned, the change now is it's under one man rather than three.
No question. How about athletically? How does this group look?
Well, they're like all Pete Carroll teams, fast and athletic, and that's what he wants. Griffin looks bigger than he did to me when I was at the combine and saw him. He's bigger in the upper body. He admitted that he gained a few pounds and wanted to bulk up a little bit to play linebacker, and he's going to meet with the Seahawks training staff and strength and conditioning folks to ask what weight they really want him to play at. He's listed at 227, which is what he was at the combine, but he looks bigger than that. But a bunch of fast players, a couple names that fans and listeners will know, Demore Stringfellow, for instance, the former UW wide receiver who transferred amid some trouble at the Huskies to Ole Miss, is in mini camp as a tryout, on a tryout basis. They've got 70 guys there, John. There are only 15 signed undrafted free agents and 9 draft picks. So 70 minus 24, there's 46 guys there on a tryout basis that are just trying to get off-season contracts. And most of those guys are fast guys. They got a guy, his name's escaped me at the moment, from Florida Atlantic. It's purported to have run a 4.19 40-yard dash at a Nike workout. He's a Netflix series star, John Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And Franklin, a wide receiver at Florida Atlantic, they were using him a little bit at cornerback yesterday. And that's the typical Pete Carroll mode. Find an athlete, find a position. Trey Flowers, of course, the safety at Oklahoma State, the fifth-round pick, working at corner because he's 6'3 and has 35-inch arms. It's that kind of minicamp again. And I noticed, John, also, and I asked Carroll about this afterwards, he looks revived, not the right word, but he looks revitalized and refreshed and challenged again, and certainly different than last year at this time. And last year really ground him down pretty good, as it did a lot of people in the Seahawks, and not making the playoffs. But Carroll's, as he hoped to be, he's revitalized and challenged by a brand new staff and an overhauled roster and some of the veteran voices like Sherman and Bennett that are out of there. He's got a job to do again, Carroll does, to rebuild and reinstill what he wants to do and the messages he wants. And he looked a little fresher yesterday.
Yeah, well, how do you go in? Because he's done this now twice, right. We're talking about Sherman and talking about Michael Bennett. And it's like, okay, I mean, these aren't the exact words that he used. It's almost like they didn't seem to be buying in. And if that's the case, they're not here. Can you kind of get the feel of what was going on, you know, and why those two became the ones kind of pointed out and picked on?
Well, for one, they're the most vocal, and they're the most vocal to say in the case of them after they left, saying that it had gotten stale and that Kel's message had worn thin, and it was a college message that works for every 4 years when players recycle, but not in the NFL when you have 6, 7, 8 year veterans in the same program. So that's one thing. They're the most visible guy. I mean, guys like Jeremy Lane are also gone, who were here just as long, but you don't hear much about that because Lane was not nearly as outspoken and prominent. There is some truth to that, though. You can tell that rather than reinvent himself at age 66 with 2 years left on his contract, Carroll's reinventing the roster, and he's reinventing. He's kept the leadership core, the veteran guys who are bought in, Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin. They're pretty politically savvy enough not to say that Pete Carroll's message has gotten stale, even if they have heard it all before. They're in on the program, so they're here, and they're pillars of the team. And those who dismiss Carroll's message, or at least wasn't buying in anymore, are not here anymore. And rather than Carroll change completely, he's going to keep the same ways and messages and just get fresher players. And that's how the message stays fresh. I think that's part of what's going on here.
Talk a little bit about what you saw. We'll kind of go one by one. So impressions of Rashard Penny.
Penny looks taller, John, than he's listed at 5'11". Now, he doesn't have pads on, and they don't have pads on, and they all look sleek because nobody's hitting them. But he looked taller. He looked almost C.J. Procise-like in his shorts and helmet. He's a little bigger than he listed at 220. He looks a little bigger as well. And they had him in the I formation, like he did a little bit at San Diego State, and he talked after practice about how, yes, it's an advantage to have played in something of a pro-style run game at San Diego State, or what passes for one in college football these days, as close to one as there is. He thinks that's going to help him at the Seahawks because it's not as huge of a transition as all these other guys who run spread offense in college football. But my first impression was he's a little bigger than I thought he'd be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about Raheem Green and what he looks like at defensive end, defensive tackle?
Green looks the part. He's lanky, tall, versatile, somebody you can see as both an end and a tackle. Really, John, it looks like it's a complete do-over from Malik McDowell. He looks like Malik McDowell in stature and in the way they're initially using him. And after practice, Carroll mentioned how well-coached he was by the USC staff, some of whom have coached with Carroll before, but how the nuances of defensive line play, the hands, the feet, the quickness, the getting off the ball, the angles, that Green's got all that. And that bodes well to the Seahawks using him at both end and tackle. And, Carroll sounded pleasantly, not surprised, but pleased that he's NFL ready coming right out of college. I wouldn't go down the list here. Will Disley, Carroll said, caught the ball better than maybe they thought he could. I saw him drop one over the middle, but of course, again, they're not doing a lot of run blocking and no pads, so they're doing mostly catching and throwing, and they were impressed by the UW former defensive lineman and his pass catching ability, of course reputed to be the best run blocker in the draft. I mentioned Flowers. He looks long. He looks taller than Richard Sherman. They're both listed at 6'3". You'll see him, though. He looks like a Pete Carroll cornerback. And you see him and say, well, yeah, no wonder they moved him from safety. That's a Pete Carroll guy with long arms. They had him on the right side yesterday. I'm sure he'll get work at both sides now that they've re-signed Byron Maxwell for just 1 year for the left side. Let me get on and listen. Michael Dixon, they challenged at the end of practice with a punting contest, and everybody watching and hooting and hollering. And he was booming the ball and angling them, and they were curling like boomerangs and everything that they said the Aussie rules punter could do. DeMarco Jones, the Ohio State offensive tackle, Pete Carroll says that they will probably eventually use him at both right and left side to see which side suits him best. Of course, he was a left tackle for the last 2 years at Ohio State. And they really think maybe they got a find there. A lot of people to follow the draft in Big Ten football didn't think Jones would last to the fifth round. And, I mean, if you're a starting left tackle for a team that won as many games as Ohio State and won the national championships and semifinals, JT Barrett's Big Ten record and victories, and Barrett running out of the pocket as often as he did, you're probably pretty good if you started 27 some games at left tackle for Ohio State. So they're excited about what they have in him. Jacob Martin, the sixth-round pick, John, Kendall was talking about how he's so fast and so agile and athletic that they may use him a little bit at Sam linebacker. Now, right now they're using him as the Leo pass rush defensive end, Cliff Averill's old position. But they said Martin, the sixth-round pick out of Temple, could envision as a linebacker because of how athletic and quick he is. I already mentioned Magoo, the seventh-round pick. Who am I missing? I think I'm missing a fifth-round pick here.
And, of course, you had mentioned the quarterback. I mean, Magoo at 6'3", how strong was that arm?
Well, look good. Again, nobody's bearing down on him. No one's hitting him, and they're not in pads. So quarterbacks tend to throw comfortably and well and deep because of what he's on him. But, yeah, he looks he didn't look quite 6'3", I guess, because he looks a little more athletic and elusive. But he was throwing accurately from the pocket, which is what they wanted to see. They got him outside a little bit, rolling out. And Carroll talked about at Florida International how he just did not have pass protection last year. His numbers were down. He threw like 2,900 yards. And they said that they were so impressed by how accurately he threw off the spot. As I mentioned, when he was getting rushed, he was second in the draft class among quarterbacks in accuracy off the spot. Baker Mayfield was the only one more accurate than he was. Magoo, the Seahawks analytics said, was 54% off the spot, even higher than Sam Darnold, who, of course, USC wonder kid who went in the top five. So the Seahawks think they have something other than just a throwaway seventh-round pick there. And, of course, he's the first quarterback, the only quarterback besides Russell Wilson that Schneider or Carroll has drafted.
Interesting. And, of course, you mentioned Cliff Averill. I think we have an idea what he might be doing because I think there will be something popping up here in the next week. But, of course, they did release him. My read, of course, is that his career is over. Kind of talk about first, you know, the reaction to it and how was that feel with him? Because, again, he meant so much to this team.
He did, John, and not just on the field but in the locker room as a leader in the community. Philanthropic interest he had with children in Haiti, where he has family members from, and rebuilding schools and homes down there, taking Seahawks teammates with him the last couple off seasons. Here's a guy, John, who he has his priorities in order. Now, it helps he's made $28 million plus the last 5 years to have your priorities in order, but he's got his family, his young boys, his wife, his philanthropic interest, as I said, helping others. That's where he's at in his life now. He just turned 32. And if there's any, as there is, any risk at all to playing with a neck injury and being able to run around and play with your kids for the rest of your life, Abel's at the point of his career in life, he doesn't need it. And that's really what happened, is that it's not worth the risk. He's had his two big contracts. He went from an 0-16 Detroit Lions team to becoming a Super Bowl champion. And he talked about yesterday how, on social media, about how appreciative he is for not only the Seahawks, but the Seattle community for supporting him and his interests. He was a joy to cover, as you know, John. He's always smiling, very genuine, very respectful to the media. He listens instead of just talks. He's kind of the few players that will take the time and has things to say outside of football to you. He's one of the favorite guys I've ever covered in 20 years of doing this, from the Bay Area to Seattle. Just a pleasure guy to be around, the kind of guy that makes everybody better. And Pete Carroll said, I love him, and that he'll always have a place in the Seahawks organization and in whatever role he may want. And they're going to miss him in the pass rush as well. They've now gotten rid of Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill in one off season. That's two Pro Bowl pass rushers, with Frank Clark really the only proven commodity in the pass rush coming back, and he's on the last year of his deal. They're really counting heavily on Barcavius Mingo Deion Jordan, guys like that to do something in the pass rush, and now Rasheem Green, the rookie third-round pick. But they have lost a lot, both in the locker room and on the field with Cliff Averill, no doubt.
No, and the great, I think the good thing is that it looks like Cliff is going to be around town. I think he'll have a very prominent voice around town. Again, I think we both, out of respect for him, I'm not going to say what I know he's going to be doing. But again, I think it's great, and congratulations on a great career. And again, what really, he was one of your favorite guys?
He was. It, kind of guy that he told you a lot about football, about what's going on. Protected the team. It wasn't like he was revealing a lot of inside story secrets, but he was just a pleasant guy to talk about life with and talk about his initiatives and why he did what he did, and the need for criminal justice reform, for instance, and childhood obesity and diabetes and youth in America, and just well beyond football. And doing this job, as you know, John, day in and day out for decades, it's refreshing to have a guy who is a little more caring than just whether you win or lose and how many sacks you get. And, he's a very well-rounded man. He's going to make a great father. He's already a great father and a great husband. And he's a great representative of the Seahawks franchise. And I, for one, will miss him. And we're not supposed to play favorites. But as I said, 20 years of doing this, he'd probably be in my top three or four athletes or coaches I've ever covered.
Well, that's fantastic. Hey, well, again, it's great to be with you. Looking forward to seeing you today. And, of course, the coverage continues in the News Tribune. Greg Bell, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John. We'll see you out there. Appreciate
okay, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, minicamp continues today, day number two. They'll have a morning practice tomorrow, and then everybody's off until the OTAs. But, of course, it is the rookie minicamp, which, of course, you get a chance to see how the guys, you know, integrate and how they try to, you know, fit in. Obviously, it's not going to be as clean as you would like because guys are going to make so many mistakes. But I think that that's interesting. Again, Shaquem Griffin obviously being the most important one to watch because, you know, he is such a excellent athlete. He is such a great story. And again, looking forward to seeing Rashard Perry. Also looking forward to see Rahim Green. Now, it's going to be kind of fun to go over there. And of course, with the good weather, that makes everything that much better. So, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's take a break and come back. Get together with Dave Grosby. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.